Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Good morning. It's 8:01 right on the nose. Hi there. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, back from a nice long Labor Day weekend. And Dr. Samira Umeth is off this weekend. So just you and I, Dr. Mixon.
Yes, the really important people are here today.
There we go.
That's all right.
Yes.
Works fine.
That totally works fine. Okay. So big news, not just medical news going on, but why don't you just share some news and update us all as to what, top of mind and what's going
well,
on.
Well, I'm going to avoid the top of mind for a moment.
Okay.
And just stick with our medical. And then I'll go to some of the top of mind just because that's going to upset some folks.
Okay. Got it.
You know, medical, around the world, we're still looking at vaccines. We're looking at risks from vaccines versus risk from the disease of COVID itself. And what we're pretty much finding is the vaccine can trigger same reactions as the disease, but just at a much lower rate.
Mm, okay.
You know, you get myocarditis and pericarditis from the disease more often than you get it from the vaccine.
Mm.
But it can happen. There was just a big study on sperm quality and function in China. They found no real changes, although interestingly, sperm counts are dropping in China as they industrialize, just as they have been in the United States and Europe since the 1960s.
Wow. Okay.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Western men have been getting less and less fertile over the course of the last 60 to almost 70 years. And sperm counts are testosterone counts are dropping. You know, so if men are looking more wussy to you, that's because you're actually seeing what's changing.
Okay.
Men in their mid to late 30s now have testosterone levels that their grandfathers would have had.
Wow.
50, 60, 70 years ago. So it's, you know, and we don't know why. These are things that are...
They're still trying to figure out and...
Yeah, a lot of factors that are being looked at, and we just don't understand why. It's a well-recognized phenomena, but... The reasons thus far elude us. Interestingly, England just did a study looking at racial risks for dying of COVID.
Okay.
The single biggest risk is, of course, age. The second risk is weight. The fatter you are, the higher you are, higher risk you are of dying. So obesity is still the number one risk worldwide. But racial factors, the only racial group that came out slightly higher risk of dying than any other were Indians.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Not Native Americans, Indians.
Wow.
From the Indian subcontinent. It's not a gigantic increase, but it is there. So, you know, Caucasians, Hispanics, Blacks, Asians, all pretty much the same, but ancestry on the Indian subcontinent does put you at slightly higher risk of dying, which is something that was brand new to me. I had not seen that at all in the past.
Okay.
You know, we've had a higher proportion of black people in America die, but that's because when you look at weights by race, the fattest people in America are African American.
Okay, and because weight is an issue with COVID.
Weight is the number one issue with COVID.
Okay.
You know, being overweight increases your risk of dying by 650%. And so if, you know, the dietary and lifestyle habits of America's African-American population trend towards being overweight.
Okay.
So that seems to explain the disparity there.
Okay.
And polio.
Yes. What's the deal with polio? It's been a couple of weeks since we updated.
Polio is now being found in the sewage effluent in more counties in New York State. So the governor of New York just declared polio to be a national disaster, or at least a state disaster.
Wow.
So a state of disaster now has been officially declared in New York State. For their one case of polio.
Still just one case.
Yes.
Okay.
But because the virus is being found in a wider range of community water supplies,
mm-hmm.
or sewage treatment.
Okay.
Which tells us that, excuse me, I'm getting this phlegm in my throat here for some reason.
You should see a doctor.
I should do that. Yes. You know, the only really good doctor I know is sick and has phlegm in the throat at the moment. So.
So one case of polio, and it's now
one active case, but because the virus is being seen in the sewage effluent in wider range areas around New York, they know then that the virus is in the community. Mm. People are getting infected. They're just not getting sick.
Okay.
They have enough immunity either from having previously been vaccinated or have enough natural immunity that their bodies are suppressing the virus. They don't get sick, but it is coming out in their stool and getting, you know, showing up in the viral testing of the water supplies. So the governor has decided it is a national emergency, and that the emergency declaration just gives her more access to federal funds, tax
money. Okay. I was wondering why. I mean, is it to scare people? It's the funds.
It's to get money.
Okay.
Always follow the money.
Follow the money. Okay.
So.
All right. And what about monkeypox? Haven't heard much about that in the news the last couple of weeks.
Monkeypox is still spreading through the homosexual, bisexual community pretty widely. You know, people who have men who have sex with men are high risk for monkeypox unless they've been vaccinated for smallpox.
Okay.
The smallpox vaccine works perfectly well against monkeypox. The two viruses are close enough. So, you know, any man out there who has a boyfriend or just, you know, explores from time to time, please make sure you've got your smallpox vaccination because that'll protect you against the monkeypox.
Against the spread. Okay. Any other news medical wise that's coming out? Any new things that are happening or on the horizon?
I think it's those are the biggies right now.
People are still wondering about.
You know, the news that distressed me a little bit this morning was the news that, not only has the Department of Justice decided to raid Mr. Trump's house, they are now going after dozens of Trump supporters issuing search warrants for homes across America if you're a well-known Trump supporter.
Wow.
So, you know, the president has, you know, declared all Republicans to be traitors to America, and now they're starting to send the FBI out as our modern Stasi. So.
Okay. Yeah, that would be
sad.
Sad to know.
Anyway.
Okay. And anything else we should know?
No. I think. Oh. Let's see. My shoulder's recovering nicely.
Good. Yes, good. Yes, okay.
Yes, okay. So you know, I'm starting to do some upper body workouts and getting stronger again. So, still a ways from where I was before I got injured, but you know, I did significantly better this week than the week before. So I'm happy with my own progress.
All right. Good, good. Well, we were not here live in the studio last week. If you have some questions that you have for the doctor, we would love to talk with you. I'm going to give you that phone number. Phone lines are open right now for you at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Phone lines are open. Whatever you'd like to talk about, maybe a recent diagnosis that you've received or a loved one has received, maybe something you don't quite understand about a medication you're taking, or you've seen something or want to know, is this real? Is it not real? What's going on? We'd love to talk with you. 800-465-8770.
And here's an idea. Just since This is produced by Longevity Medical Clinic.
Yes.
If you happen to not like what time and gravity are doing to you, if you find yourself getting slower, weaker, fatter, your brain is slowing down, your sexuality is fading, your skin is looking like your grandma, and you just don't like what is happening, you might call and ask what you can do about it.
Yes.
That is what we do for a living around
here. This is what we do, and of course, the show is sponsored by Longevity.
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and of course,
happier. Because of all those other things, too. Here's the phone number to call. It's 800-465-8770. Okay, so I have a question, Dr. Mixon. As soon as the show is done today, my friend and I are jumping on a plane with 80 other friends. We're going with a group to Germany. And they're still having us mask in the airplane as we come in just to Germany, and then as we leave to Germany. Is that starting to some other doctors say no? Yeah. Why are hormones important to us as we age?
Okay. Well, let's address menopause in the first place. I don't like the phrase female hormones because men and women make the same hormones.
Okay.
And the primary sex hormone in men and women is testosterone. Estrogen is not the primary female hormone.
Okay. And see, we always think of estrogen or progesterone as a female.
And that's because women have more estrogen than men do. But women have 2.5 times more testosterone than they have estrogen. So
yeah, and that just blew me away. I was like, what? Testosterone?
Yes.
Okay.
But that testosterone is what helps give you strong bones. It provides drive, ambition, self-confidence, and sexuality.
Okay.
So that it's important. It also provides spatial orientation. if you put them in the same units, convert them to nanograms per deciliter for both testosterone and estrogen, you'll find that a man has a testosterone at, let's say at his peak, when he's 18 or 20 years old, he'll run a total testosterone of 1,000 to 1,200.
Okay, and that's just normal for him.
And that's normal for a healthy, young, testosterone-ridden male. A woman will run about 85.
And that's normal for her?
75 to 85, yes, okay. So a mean of about 80. So the big difference in 80 and 1,000.
Yes, very much so.
But her estrogen will be 30 nanograms per deciliter.
Okay.
Okay. Now his estrogen will be 3.
Okay. That. All right. So he does have some, but it's a very low amount.
Yes. So our estrogen level is much lower than a woman's. Okay. Nevertheless, her testosterone is much higher than her estrogen.
Okay.
So in men and women, if you're looking at real hormone replacement, you need to be replacing her testosterone.
Okay.
And if, like most American women over 50, she's carrying some extra body fat, she will convert a significant portion of that testosterone into estrogen. Because estrogen and testosterone are only one hydroxyl group different. And there is an enzyme in fat, especially abdominal fat, that is, it's called aromatase, that converts testosterone into estrogen. And so overweight people tend to run higher estrogens because they're converting their testosterone into estrogen.
Okay, and that's both for men and women.
Men and women, yeah. Men, overweight men, who take testosterone supplementation to raise their testosterone up to more youthful levels without knowing it are often converting a lot of that testosterone into estrogen.
Oh.
Because they're fat.
Okay.
And the fat is converting their testosterone to estrogen. So, if men are going to take a testosterone supplement, they need to be taking a look at what is their body doing with that testosterone they're being given? What are they turning it into? Most women think that menopause is due to low estrogen, but it's not. The reason women stop cycling their periods is low progesterone. Okay. Progesterone drops out faster than faster than estrogen. And so at age 50, which is the average age of menopause, the average woman has lost 50% of her estrogen. So her estrogen, when she stops menstruating, is about half of what it was at 20.
Okay.
So she's still got significant estrogen levels. In fact, her estrogen has been declining. It will continue to decline. She won't get down to no production until she's about 70.
Okay.
But her progesterone is dropping faster. At 50, she's lost half her estrogen, but two-thirds of her progesterone. And it's that two-thirds loss of the progesterone that results in the period stopping to cycle.
Okay, so that's the whole cause. It's not just one thing.
It's not one thing. That's right. The testosterone is also down, of course. And that's why, interestingly enough, in their 50s, 50% of men have lost the ability to have sex. They've lost their ability to have erections. But 70% of women have lost interest in having sex.
Oh, okay. Because of that.
They started with a lower testosterone to first place, and they're losing it.
Okay.
And so half of men and 70% of women basically become neutered by mid-50s.
Okay. We're going to talk more about hormones and whatever you would like to discuss. Here's that phone number to call to get in today, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We would like to talk with you, and phone lines are wide open. That's the number, and we'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Stay right there.
Just to let you guys know, I've listened to the show for, I think, decades, and I really appreciate this show. So thank you.
Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio today, and we would love to talk with you. 800-465-8770. Phone lines are wide open for you. 800-465-8770. And we're talking hormones this morning, but we can talk about whatever topic you have in mind. But let's finish up a little bit with hormones. And why is it important? We always think that, okay, my hormones are low. What are some other things that hormones help us with, and why we need to be on top of this as we age?
Well, for one thing, the best data is now indicating that breast cancer is primarily an estrogen deficiency disease. It turns out that when your estrogen is at its highest, your breast cancer risk is at its lowest. And as estrogen levels drop, breast cancer risk starts rising.
Okay.
And there's a inverse curve. The lower your estrogen gets over the years, the higher your breast cancer risk comes.
Okay.
When you finally hit your mid-70s and your estrogen can't go any lower, your breast cancer risk doesn't go any higher. It stabilizes.
Okay.
So, you know, this thing about estrogen causing breast cancer turns out to be wrong. It was a study published back in 2001 that scared the bejabbers out of everybody. But it turns out what was wrong with that study is they gave women two hormones, equine estrogens, that's estrogens extracted from the urine of pregnant horses, and which raised some eyebrows for some of us because humans and pregnant horses don't make the same mixture of estrogens.
Okay.
You have to remember, estrogen is not a hormone, it's a class of hormones. Two-thirds of the estrogens found in that Premarin are never found in human beings. So we're basically giving women an estrogen mixture that has never been seen in a human being prior to the 1950s when Premarin came on the market. So that raised some questions saying, gee, was it the mix of the abnormal mix of estrogens? Well, it turns out that's not true.
Okay.
What it did turn out to be was the other hormone they gave with it, something called Provera.
Oh, yeah.
Provera is a progestin. It's not progesterone. Progesterone is the hormone that your own body makes. Provera is a synthetic version of progesterone that is acid stable, so you can take it as a pill. If you take real progesterone orally as a pill, your stomach acid destroys a lot of it. And the more acid you've got in your stomach, the more of it you destroy. So it's hard to give women a reliable dose of real progesterone by mouth. because some women will destroy a lot of it. Some won't destroy much because they don't make much acid. And as people age, they produce less and less acid.
Oh, okay.
Right. So you can't even predict which woman's going to have a lot and which woman's going to have a little, except that you know that older women have less acid than young women, which means, oddly, older women will destroy less of their progesterone than young women, if you give it
wow.
to them by
mouth. Okay.
But anyway, they've made an acid-stable version of progesterone and call it Provera. The problem is that Provera raises the risk of breast cancer by 67%.
Wow. Okay. So was that like the Depo Provera?
Depo Provera is an injectable, long-lasting form of it.
Okay.
That we use for birth control for young women.
Okay. That's where I heard that term.
Yeah. And so Depo Provera is given to a lot of young women. A downside of that, of course, is every young woman that takes Depo Provera is going to gain 30 pounds. So you make them fat, but at least they're not fertile. So fat, but not fertile. But the question is, how much are we raising the risk of breast cancer in later life? Because we know that in the Women's Health Initiative study, it raised the risk of breast cancer by 67%.
Wow.
We actually got that inklings of that from a European study, the European Three Nation study. But when we went back and looked at that same data, because some of the women had had hysterectomies, and they did, the women that had hysterectomies did not get Provera, they just got the estrogen.
Okay.
The women who just got estrogens lowered their risk of breast cancer by 30%.
Wow.
So it turns out that giving women estrogen alone actually lowered the risk of breast cancer. Giving them estrogen with Provera, the estrogen lowered it by 30%. The Provera raised it by 76%. The net was a 27% increased risk of breast cancer.
Wow. Okay.
And the newspapers and everybody jumped to conclusions. Oh, it's the estrogen. No, it wasn't. It was a synthetic progestin.
Okay.
That was causing the problem.
And they now know this.
And we now know
20 years later.
And yet, many physicians, because we have more lawyers in America than the rest of the world put together.
Wow.
And because there is a public perception that estrogen might cause breast cancer, they're afraid to give it to you.
Okay.
Even though we now know scientifically it'll lower your risk of breast cancer, but the doctors are all afraid of getting sued.
Okay. All right. Well, we will take a break on hormones and quickly go to the phones. We have a caller on the line and we have room for you as well. 800-465-8770. Joe is calling in from Chehalis. Good morning, Joe.
How are you this morning, sir?
Oh, very good. Thank you. I'm calling about my 87-year-old father that recently got a blood clot in his lung. He's very healthy for 87-year-old. He doesn't take any medications at all. Up until now, I understand he's on some kind of blood thinner. What would cause that to happen? And is there anything beyond the blood thinners that he can do to stop that from happening? I guess it was pretty painful.
Painful and potentially fatal. Yeah.
Wow.
You don't normally get the blood clot in the lung as a primary clot. What you normally get is either a clot in a deep vein down in your legs or your pelvis that then breaks free and floats up, is pumped from the heart out into the lung. So we call that a pulmonary embolism. And the two most common places are either someone who's in atrial fibrillation, that is, the upper chambers of the heart are not contracting efficiently. They're just kind of wiggling. And they form a clot there that gets kicked off into the lung. Or it's coming from a vein lower down. And so, you know, somebody needs to take a close look and see if they can figure out where the clots came from. Because once you know where they came from, you've got a better idea of what you can do about it.
Well, I mean, you know, you went to a hospital, would they do all those tests? Would they, or is that
if he were 50 or 60, I'm confident they would, but you said he's now in his late 80s. There is a trend that offends me that's basically clinical nihilism, that once guys pass about 80, doctors tend to become less and less aggressive. Oh, well, he's old. What are you going to do about it? Sort of thing. I disapprove of that. You know, I think you should be looking at the individual and say, you know, how well is this person doing and how well can we help him do for how long in the future? But whenever I hear someone of that age group, my first fear is that they were not worked up aggressively just because of their age. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I see it often enough that it comes to top of mind.
Can you request from these
yes,
you know, hospitals
and hopefully, although, you know, the request should probably come from his primary care physician. I mean, hopefully he has a family doctor that he sees regularly. Everyone should have. Yeah. And he should be going to his family doc and say, you know, did they send the records to you? What kind of workup did they do? Do they know where my clot came from? You know?
Well, now they're telling him that he's on these blood thinners, that the body will absorb the clot.
Yep.
And he'll be fine.
Yes, that's true.
That's how it works.
Yeah, the blood thinners will lower his risk of forming a new clot, and eventually he will indeed dissolve the old clot, and you know he'll move ahead. The worry is he going to stay on the blood thinners the rest of his life, or do we have a source for the clot that can be fixed?
I see.
And you know because if whatever triggered that clot isn't fixed, he's at risk of another one unless he stays on those blood thinners till his dying day.
Well, those blood thinners, is that become a problem for him? Other aspects?
Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Okay? There is a downside to every decision we make. Every medication we give that has a benefit has a concomitant downside. And with the blood thinners, the risk is bleeding. You know, you don't want to bleed into your brain or your eye or your kidneys, you know. And whenever you inhibit someone's ability to form clots, you increase their risk of bleeding disorders. Mm. Now,
he had a mini stroke about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And, that was my concern, is this blood thinner going to create some bleeding in the brain?
Well, that is a worry, and it does happen. Although, what you just told me actually makes me think that he probably should stay on the blood thinners long term. Mini stroke is another word for transient ischemic attack. It's usually where you form a little clot that blocks off a blood vessel in your brain, and then your body dissolves that clot and restores the blood supply to that part of the brain before that part of the brain dies. So you get kind of stroke-like symptoms that clear within about 24 hours. Okay. But if you've had one TIA, one of these episodes, your risk of having another one in the next 2 years is about 30%. And so once you start having those, your risk of having more goes up and up and up. Mm. And so, you know, at some point, there's a balance at which the risk of bleeding from the blood thinners is outweighed by the risk of clotting, you know, from other causes. And if he's flipping off clots now to both his lung and his brain, he's probably at fairly high risk. And once more, why is he flipping off clots? Where are they coming from? Is there something we can do about them? Or does he need to stay on the blood thinners forever? And obviously, I'm just the guy on the radio. I haven't seen his studies, haven't done his workup, you know. So I can just kind of give you general rules of thumbs and things that I worry about.
Well, he's going to go to his primary here next week. And so I'm going to give him, you know, what you've told me to ask questions.
Yep.
And, you know, he's 87. He's lived a good life. And I understand, you know, we do go downhill as we get older.
Yep.
That's kind of what it is.
But he's only 12 years older than I am, and I have absolutely no intention of quitting in 12 years. I'll still be starting new companies then.
Yes, he will be. And flying to Iceland. Oh.
All right.
All right.
Joe, thank you so much for your call.
Bye-bye.
And we'll take your call as well at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
I was going to make the comment on your radio shows. I listen to all 4 hours every Saturday. Oh. I think a good subtitle for your show would be Laugh-In. I just laugh like crazy with you guys and all the comments you make and really enjoy them.
I'm Lynette, Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and we have room for you on the phones today, 800-465-8770. We're going to head over to Redmond right now. We have Sue on the line. Hi there, Sue. Good morning.
Good morning, Sue. How can we help you?
Good morning to both of you and for the doctor. Some time ago, I talked with you and said that I had been taking 3 packets of Relief Factor and then was came down with AFib and had to start taking Eliquis. So you said I should drop it to 2 packets only because of the bleeding factor.
Right.
Then several weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, I thought I heard you tell another woman who called in and asked about Eliquis and Relief Factor to only take one to avoid bleeding.
Yes.
So now I'm just wondering, have you changed your thinking?
It depends on the size of the person.
Oh, well, I'm pretty good size.
Yeah. You know, body mass counts. Whenever you take any medication or supplement, you are diluting that out through your entire body mass. And so a 100-pound woman and a 200-pound woman can tolerate very different doses of the same supplement. And so,
okay,
you know,
I got it.
So a tiny little girl, I tell her, take
I
less.
I wish I were tiny little girl like your sweet wife.
Yes, and I think that collar was quite
I'm
small.
I'm a nice, strapping American.
I do understand.
Anyway.
Yes. Like one of my ancestors, you know, a Viking woman carries a sword in one hand and a sheep in another. You know?
There you go. There you go. All right, so it sounds like 2 then is what I should be doing. Because it definitely 1 is not quite doing the trick. So that would be great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care.
Take care. Love your program and gained so much information and knowledge through the years with you and Dr. Umack, too. So bless you all.
I appreciate it, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. And so for some listening that may be going, okay, so what's Relief Factor? You've got some information for us on that, of course, since you invented it.
Since I invented it. That's right. Yeah. Actually, Relief Factor is my primary source of income. So, you know, well, full disclosure here, you know, I own the company. And so everybody who buys Relief Factor is putting money in my pocket. And thank you very much. I do appreciate it. So do my wife, my children, my grandchildren. Several years ago, I had a chiropractor who was a patient of mine who came to me and said, Jerry, I treat a lot of musculoskeletal pain. And can you come up with something that'll decrease inflammation and pain perception? Because it'll make me look a lot better to my patients. Yeah. And I can sell it in the office and, you know, you and I'll both make some money off it. And I said, that sounds like a good idea to me. So my original thought was I was going to find something that I could have chiropractors carry in their offices. And I got on the medical literature. I found about 20 different over-the-counter supplements that actually decrease systemic inflammation and have some impact on pain perception. The best 4 of them, I narrowed it down to 4 that had really good peer-reviewed literature saying that they worked nicely for those purposes. And then my question was, which one should I carry? And then it occurred to me, since all four of them work by different metabolic pathways, why not put them all four in the product? Now, that meant the product couldn't be real cheap because you're actually taking four supplements instead of one.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And that's just more expensive to manufacture because you got to buy the full, you know, the full amount that the studies say work of each one and put them together. But that way, if one of them doesn't handle the problem, there's another one that works by a different pathway.
Mm, okay.
And if that one doesn't, there's a third one that works by yet another pathway. And if that one doesn't, there's a fourth one.
Yeah, fourth one, yes.
And so with four different things, each of them working by a different mechanism, you cover the vast majority of people's inflammation-related pain. So that's what we did. We put it all together and started marketing it, about 8 or 9 years ago or so. And, you know, now it's about 140,000 people buy it every month.
There you go. And are finding relief from pain and inflammation.
Yeah.
And I've gone to a couple of doctors and they'll say, well, have you heard about Relief Factor? I'm like, yes, I have. And I'm taking two. And even the eye doctor had asked me about that as well, as I had my eye surgeries. And then a shot recently, he said, take some extra Relief Factor for that.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of orthopedic surgeons now use Relief Factor because they deal with orthopedic pain. And yes, any doctor whose practice involves inflammation and pain related to inflammation. Now, the reason I specify that is not all pain is from inflammation. And so if your pain is not inflammatory in nature, Relief Factor won't work.
Ah, okay.
You know, let's say you've got a couple of, you know, you've got some scar tissue that every time you move your arm in a certain direction, that scar tissue is pulling on a nerve.
Mm.
And that's why it hurts. Well, Relief Factor won't help that. The scar tissue is still pulling on that nerve, for goodness sakes. You know? On the other hand, if you've got an inflamed joint, you've got some arthritis, you've got some issue that's causing inflammation in muscle or fascia or ligament or a joint, well, then if you take enough of it long enough, the Relief Factor will decrease the inflammation and hence decrease the pain.
Okay.
The trick is they have to take enough of it long enough. If you've got a lot of inflammation and you've had it for a long time, it may not cool down in a few days. You may need to take it in full doses for 2, 3, sometimes 4 weeks to suppress it.
Okay.
Okay. Other people, if it's a shorter or milder issue, 3 days may do it instead of 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, it's a matter of how much you take, for how long, for which kind of pain.
All right.
But at any rate, it's been very good for me.
Very good. Relief Factor. So, of course, information on that is on our website at longevitymedicalclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com has details on that, just in case you were going, oh, what's that for? Now, when I was moving and hauling things with my husband out of the storage unit into the U-Haul and back, that was the week I took an extra packet at night. And you know what? I woke up every morning and I was able to go to work and then in the afternoon and evening help my husband and move. And I was like, okay, that was a good thing to do
You know, I'm a 75-year-old guy with a lot of old gunshot wounds from my foolish youth. And
wait a minute, you were in the Marines.
I was in paratrooper.
You were a paratrooper, okay.
173rd Airborne.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, I've had a lot of pain my entire life, and two packets a day generally does me a good job, unless I do something stupid. Which, as you know, an active male, I'm prone to doing stupid things, and I hurt myself, and then I need to go to three packets.
You go to three.
Occasionally even four, you know, although I would not recommend that officially, because at four a day, you start inhibiting your control of triglycerides and LDL. Your cholesterols might start to rise a bit at four a day.
Okay.
So, you know. So my official thing is three a day, but if I do something really stupid, I'll go to four for three or four days.
Yes. Remembering Dr. Mixon's number two rule, anything that's good enough to...
that's number one.
Oh, that's number one. Okay.
First rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There's a downside to every decision we make in medicine.
Okay.
Second rule, the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job.
Okay.
The more you use, the higher the risk of side effects.
Okay.
Okay. Third rule, if you don't measure,
you don't know.
Which is why our clinics do so much measurements and lab work.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth rule is one I hate. You can do everything right, and things can still go to hell.
Mm.
That's just a rule of life.
Okay. Yeah. You can't figure that out. Huh. Okay. We have another caller on the line. We're going to take a quick break. Sue, let's see. Sue is gone. We've got Rich waiting for us. Rich, we're going to get to your call right after the break. And here is that phone number to get through with your question this morning. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
She goes, you got to listen to this guy. It makes a lot of sense. You know, he just made a lot of good common sense. You know, like you said, you don't measure, you don't know. I mean, physically, I'm stronger and faster than I was 10 years ago.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. My name is Lynette. Glad to be with you this Saturday morning. And Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and we invite you to make a phone call if you have a question about your health or maybe something you're dealing with, maybe a diagnosis or maybe some side effects. You're not really sure what's going on. We'd love to talk with you. 800-465-8770 is the number to call. And we have Rich on the line. Good morning, Rich.
Hello, Rich.
Good morning. I have a question, or at least I want to get your evaluation of what I'm listening to. A couple things I'm listening to are a couple people. One is Robert Malone. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed he's the inventor of the messenger RNA, or at least one of the contributors to the messenger RNA.
Yeah, way back when it was being researched for HIV treatments, yes.
And then also, I was listening to this I don't know if it's an actual aerial or what, but they were talking, he was talking specifically about the uptick in death rates between, of the, young working class between, 25 and 44 of 87% mm-hmm. since the rollout of the COVID vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And, this particular person, you know, he says he scores 100%. It's because of the COVID vaccine that these young people are dying, and that's quite an increase. He's saying that this, you know, this is like what happens during a war or whatever, but it's because of these vaccines. Now, when I listen to Robert Malone, he puts out lots of information, but one of the things that disturbed me is the skewing of the VAERS, the vaccine accident, the side effects from the vaccine, that these statistics are being skewed because, number one, he said they're breaking the blind. They're taking people out that have had adverse reactions. And and now that I see that Biden and his bunch are advocating this, quote, new booster for these different variants, and they go on to say that, well, you know, they make up this thing, say, well, the reason that God made two arms is so that you can have a vaccine and one arm for the flu
yes.
and the other vaccine for the COVID. And so I'm just wondering, you know, I did take the Johnson & Johnson vaccine way back in June.
Uh-huh.
I took it. I had no problem with that. That is your standard traditional vaccine. I will not take an messenger RNA vaccine. But I got a feeling that because me being in the healthcare business, they're going to start mandating that unless you take it, you're not going to be able to keep your job. So I'm just wondering if you have any comment on any of that.
Oh, I got a lot of comments. You know this show. I mean, I've always got comments. So, of course, sometimes the comment is, I don't know. But in this one, I know a fair bit. This is data that I follow pretty closely. I have been very disappointed with the way that Center for Disease Control and NIH has published their data and followed their data sets. They've been sloppy as hell. And, you know, there's a whole lot of folks at Center for Disease Control and NIH that need to be fired. They just do. They've done a horrible job. And they've left a lot of people out in the open not knowing what they should know. And the reason they don't know is nobody knows, because the data has been gathered in such a sloppy, haphazard manner and reported piecemeal. So I can tell you what the official datas are, and the official data set, you know, is that actually the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that you took is the least effective and has the highest risk of causing fatal side effects. So, you know, I stopped recommending the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for anybody, because it didn't do as good a job of protecting against COVID. And especially in younger women, it caused a dramatic increase in fatal blood clots in the brain. So, you know, I don't like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It may be traditional, but it stinks. The messenger RNA vaccines, they have some issues. And one of the issues is that they don't work very long. You know, when you got your first two sets of shots, you had about a 95% protection against COVID 2 weeks after the second shot. But within 5 months, you lost 50% of your protection.
Yeah.
And when you took your booster, you lost 50% of your protection in 10 weeks, 2.5 months. And that's not a trend that reassures me, to see less and less protection with each shot. Okay. Now we've got the new variant vaccines out that are saying, well, these are tailored specifically for the Omicron variants that are out around now. And I'm saying, well, that's great, except the Omicron variants are not very dangerous.
That's like a cold, right?
For most people, it is, yes.
Yeah, mild symptoms.
If you're in your 80s and 100 pounds overweight and have congestive heart failure and kidney failure, okay, you probably really need it. But if you're reasonably lean and fit and under 85, you probably don't. The number of deaths from Omicron under 70 are almost zero. Mm-hmm. So yes, we've got a brand new fancy vaccine that they have not had the time to test. That's the part that just boggles my mind. NIH said we're going to approve it, even though they've only looked at 200 and some odd people, because they think it'll probably work, but they don't have the proof. Well, okay.
And what about the deaths?
Well, the deaths, I think, are a different issue. And I can't see, again, I've got suspicions. We are seeing we've always had healthy young athletes that topple over and die. You know, for my entire life, we've read these kind of mystery deaths. The 16-year-old basketball player who falls dead on the court in a high school practice. Mm-hmm. It's always happened. We're reading about it a lot more often, but I don't know if it's because we're more vigilant or if it's really happening. I just have not seen a statistical compilation. I do know that deaths from fentanyl are over 107,000 people now, and those are mostly younger people.
Yeah.
Most of the people dying from drug overdoses in this country are young. They're not the 85-year-olds. Okay. They're the kids. And that is caused by Mr. Biden basically turning the southern border over to the drug cartels. You know, the State Department is bringing in about 500,000 people a year, and the drug cartels are bringing in 2.5 million people a year. You know, the State Department will vet their people and make sure they're all vaccinated and have no communicable diseases. The drug cartels bring anybody who pays. So, you know, I suspect that a lot of the younger deaths are due to the epidemic of drug overdoses from fentanyl.
Well, the doctor, Dr. Malone, was saying that, you know, you say that they're sloppy at the CDC. Well, he's saying they're willingly breaking the blinds so that they diminish or minimize the amount of side effects because they're beholden to the pharmaceuticals. So the CDC and the FDA are not independent agencies. They're
Toadies
of the pharmaceuticals of the you know the Pfizer and
sure.
the, you know whoever makes these.
Yeah,
so
their
that's
budget.
The point he's making.
Yeah, their budget from tax money is not sufficient to cover their costs. Okay, especially the National Institute of Health gets most of its money from the pharmaceutical industry, and that's been the case for the last 30 years. Okay, that's not new. So yes, you should always look a bit askance at what the federal government tells you, especially when the agency is dependent on the people they regulate for their survival. that's just not a good thing. But that's the reality we've got. You say, well, they're willing. Yeah. People make decisions, and you decide, are you going to follow the protocols 100%, or are you going to cut corners? When you cut corners and you put out sloppy data, that's a result of a decision to cut corners. So, it all depends on how you interpret, as Mr. Clinton famously taught us, it all depends on what the meaning of is.
Well, the other thing that you mentioned before is the uptick in myocarditis. So basically,
yes.
It's creating a inflammation inside of your heart, and basically what winds up doing is killing people when it does that. I've got friends that are dying from heart attacks. I got people, well, like that person that called about his father that's 85 years old that had that blood clot in his lung. Where did
sure.
that come from? Well, I thought, well, maybe he got it because he had the COVID vaccine, you know?
Maybe, but maybe doesn't answer my question, okay? I live in the science, so I want to see the data. For instance, let me give you an example. Yes, pericarditis and myocarditis both increase from the vaccine and the disease. But the studies I've seen worldwide, not just those here in the United States, clearly indicate that you're far higher risk of getting it from the disease than the vaccine. But you know, guess what? I had a pericarditis myself several years ago, way before COVID came out, way before the vaccines. And in people over 50, the number one cause of pericarditis is a previous viral infection. You get a cold, you get a flu, you get a sore throat, you get some viral infection. And your body reacts to that virus and you start triggering antibodies that interact with your heart or the lining around the heart, the pericarditis. I thought I was having a heart attack. You know, it was 10 years before COVID came out. It was 99% chance just I had a mild viral infection that didn't bother me much and I got a little pericarditis as a reaction. So these things have always happened. And yes, COVID and the COVID vaccines can trigger them, just like dozens and dozens of other viruses. Okay, flu causes pericarditis.
Are you going to get the new vaccine?
I'm waiting. I don't know. Again, I tend to be skeptical, and what I'm doing is I'm waiting to see how big a problem occurs this fall as we all go back indoors and we turn on the heating systems, and we start getting our new round of COVID. How many people are getting sick and how sick are they getting? You know, I'm fairly lean. I keep my muscle mass up. I keep my body fat down. So I'm at pretty low risk. I've been vaccinated twice. I've been boosted once and I've had COVID once after that. So my immune system should be pretty well primed to protect me against serious illness. So unless I see a lot of lean, healthy people in my age group getting real sick, I'll probably skip the vaccine.
There you go. Hey, Rich, we've got to go and take our break. You bet. And thank you for your call. We'll be back with hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. You stay right there. And of course, we'll get back to you, Carl and Robert, in just a few moments at 800-465-8770. Stay right there.